Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the one God to whom all praise is due, the Lord of the world, who came to us in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, to whom praise is indeed due forever. And in the name of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, his last and greatest messenger, and their divine reminder in our midst, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, I greet the listening audience, my distinguished panel, with the greeting words of peace and paradise in the Arabic language, Assalamu alaikum. And also just peace. So, if I'm not mistaken, we have our beloved sister Sydney Walker on the line. Are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Glad to have you. And also, Queen Vanessa Chosen Marie, are you there?
Yes, sir. I am here.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, now let me call Victoria back, because I think she hung up. I'm not sure. Hold on. Let me call her back to get her on the line, and so that we can go ahead and move forward. And, wait a minute. Okay, now. Y'all have to forgive me because there was a mix-up earlier, so I'm ending up having to engineer. Because otherwise I would have had everyone on the line ahead of time. So how is everybody feeling this evening, though?
No, I can't complain.
Brother Kareem?
Yes, yes, ma'am.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Okay.
Hello.
Yes, is this Sister Victoria Miller?
Yes, this is she.
Yes, ma'am. This is Brother Kareem. How are you doing this evening?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm just fine. Thank God. And welcome to Conscious Black Nation.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, so now that we have everyone on the line, I was looking for one other individual. I'm not sure if they're going to make it or not. That would have been Sister Amokala Muhammad. I hope she does, but she just had a new baby, so she may be busy with the baby, which is a good thing because we are talking about parenting tonight. Our subject tonight is Suffer the Little Children, Part 2. What we're going to be dealing with is parenting. Part of what we're going to talk about is going to be single parenting, and then also as opposed to two parents being in the house, and just parenting in general. But before we get into that, I'm going to start with you, Sister Victoria Miller, if you would introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about something about yourself.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Victoria Miller. I am married. I have two children of my own. And currently in the process of seeking employment that doesn't take too much away from my kids.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Fantastic. All right. And Sister Sydney Walker, if you would please introduce yourself.
I am 36. I'm a mother of four. I am a single parent. And I work full time, so I guess I'm on the total opposite side of that spectrum.
Yes, ma'am. Fantastic. And now, someone who needs no introduction, step forward, Queen Vanessa Chosen Marie, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Assalamu alaikum. I am. Vanessa Chosen Marie. I am a mother of seven and also still single and a full-time mother and about to be once again full-time student. And I would say just constantly seeking knowledge and truth and sharing that which is imparted to me to assist with moving our people forward.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Fantastic. Great to hear that. Well, as you know, here's those of you who have been here before, here on Conscious Black Nation, what we do here is we deal with issues, if you will, using that language, that are pertinent to, which affect us right now in our community as a people. However, we don't want to just talk about it. We don't want to just talk about the negative, quote-unquote, aspect of it. We want to also come up with some solutions by the end of the show that people can apply in their everyday lives. And that having been said, you know, I don't waste any time. We're going to move right forward. As I said, our subject is Suffer the Little Children, Part 2, because we did an earlier show concerning this, but we were dealing more so with teenagers, gun violence, and things of that nature at that time. But to give us a little background or a foundation to build on, the subject is taken from the 19th chapter of Matthew, verses 13 and 14, where it states, "Then were there brought unto him little children, that he should put his hands on them and pray. And the disciples rebuked them. But Jesus said, Suffer little children, and forbid them not to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. On that same note, Matthew 18:2-7, and Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them and said, Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And who shall receive one such little child in my name, receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to the man by whom the offense cometh. And final passage of scripture comes from the Holy Quran, Sharif, Maulana Muhammad Ali translation, Surah or chapter 93, entitled Al-Dua, or the brightness of the day. We seek refuge in God, Allah, against the accursed shaitan of Satan. In the name of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful, by the brightness of the day and the night, when it is still, thy Lord has not forsaken thee, nor is he displeased. And surely the latter state is better for thee than the former. And soon will thy Lord give thee, so that thou wilt be well pleased. Did he not find thee an orphan, and give thee shelter, and find thee groping, so he showed the way, and find thee in want, so he enriched thee. Therefore the orphan opens not, and him who asks, chide not, and the favor of thy Lord proclaim. That is our base. Like I said, we're going to get right into it. I'm going to start with you, Mr. Walker. I just call you Sister C. Are you there?
I'm sorry?
Yes, ma'am. Are you?
I'm here.
Sitting?
I hear music playing. Yes.
You're right. No. That's I don't know what that is. If anyone does have a radio or anything on, if you will, please mute it or turn it off, because we're picking that up. Mics are very sensitive. But I would like to start with you. And my first question to you is, in your view, what is a parent?
A parent to me is someone that guides a child. Like we're supposed to teach them the way to go, from right, from wrong, morally, we're supposed to teach them so that when they're older, they'll know how to navigate themselves without us. They'll be able to do it and teach their family.
Yes, ma'am. All right. I mean, that couldn't be more concise than that. And Sister Victoria, same question to you. What is a parent?
A parent is someone who loves the child, protects the child, provides all that child's needs, and most importantly, we train a child up in the way in which he or she should go, you know, back to the Lord, so that that child or those children are, they fulfill the purpose as well. Basically.
Yes, ma'am. Praise be to Allah. And Sister Chosen, same question.
Yes, brother. I'm here. You know how I do. I mute my phone because I have little ones that run around.
I'm saying.
Me too.
For me, I would say that a parent is... Is I would say God's appointed guide for a child, because you don't necessarily have to be of blood to that child to parent them. So in being a guide, there are many, just as many facets to being that, because we're the nurturers, we are the protectors, you know, we love them and teach them. And, you know, throughout their life in different stages, we take on different roles. with them, because I know, you know, for many of us in the beginning, it's hard to be a child's friend until they get to a certain age, and then you're kind of a friend with limits, and we know where we stand together. So for me, the parent embodies the direction that God would give all of us individually. We get that anyway, but in the physical, and we have a purpose to feel, as they have a purpose to feel too. Because I know me as a parent, I always think, am I doing what God would want me to do? Is this the parenting that He expected from me? And that's because I have so many already. I always say that I think He put me here just so that I can replenish. And so I always hope that I'm doing my job well.
Yes, ma'am. Well, yeah, it is quite a job. And, you know, before we even go any further, one thing I do want to say, which is really not enough, but it is a term that shows approval, you know, I want to say, you know, I mean, my hat, my crown, whatever you want to call it, is off to particular, anyone who is actually being a parent, but particularly to those who have to operate as single parents, you know, because that is a mighty job, because whether it's male or female, but it's usually female. I saw some statistics today that says in America alone that over 40% of all households are single parent homes. But however, in the black community, that figure rises to a whopping 75%. Mm-hmm. And I mean that's a job. You all have a job. So like I say, my hat is off to you. Now, before we go any further, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying thank you, because it is.
Yes, ma'am. Now, before we go any further, I always do some research, and I looked up the word parent, and I pulled out, there was a lot of definitions, but I pulled out the definitions that I thought would most or best suit our topic here tonight. And this is how Webster describes a parent: one that begets or brings forth offspring, a person who brings up and cares for another, an animal or plant that is regarded in relation to its offspring, a group from which another arises and to which it usually remains subsidiary, from the Latin perere, to give birth to. Now, that having been said, I want to get the view from somebody who may be sitting back in the airways. Queen Aziza, are you there?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Yes, ma'am. We were trying to get on the air earlier, so I didn't get a chance to bring you up. But, however, I want to ask you, you know, before we move on to the second question, what, in your view, what is a parent?
Oh, God. a parent is something that I have been for a very long time. You're going to make me tell my age. But, excuse me, I think a parent is that moral guiding force, that, you know, someone who has the duty and the responsibility of rearing a child, you know, like all the sisters said before me, caring for a child, the guidance, you know, the rod of understanding, because, like Sister, I think Vanessa said, we go through so many phases of life with them. Sometimes we have to be mother and father, but it's just the person who takes on that duty, that responsibility of caring for that child in all aspects. I always say that there's a difference between letting a child grow up and raising a child and training a child. So a parent is one who is obligated for bringing that life forward to carry that person into adulthood, but you never really stop being a parent. So that's a very broad question. Brother Kareem, it's God on earth to everybody who's under 50, put it like that.
Because
I tell mine, I don't care how old you get, you ain't going to never run nothing over here, so, you know, you don't get grown in my house.
Okay, now our second question, and I'm going to direct it to Sister Victoria first, is, and I know you've partially answered it, but just to get a little more meat into this, how does one parent, you know, I mean, just simply, point blank, from your view, you know, how you do it?
Okay. How do you parent? Most of the time, you do what you've learned as a child from your parents. I know a lot of times I think back to what my mother and my grandmother did for me growing up. And a lot of what I do now is it's been learned, imitated. And then another thing is it's nature, maternal instinct. You know, I kind of put myself in my child's shoes, how I felt as a child and how I feel now, how would I feel in that child's shoes, what is it that I need to do, what should I be doing, you know, and then I think of it from a biblical aspect as well, what would God have for me to do?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. All right. And Sister Chosen, same question to you.
Yes. And let me say this, too. Victoria Miller is my baby sister. I have to preface that with what I'm getting ready to say because, it, to me, in a lot of ways, she was my first child because I'm 13 years older than her. And we were at home, you know, in the afternoons together, and she taught me how not to let a child get over on me. I let her have her way. And whatever she wanted, my mom could have said, stop spoiling the girl. I let her have whatever she wanted. So she taught me in a lot of ways how to line myself up and just give. So, with mine, I try to be as on the surface and as real as possible. I don't sugarcoat things with them. I don't lie to them because I want them to be thinkers, for one, and I don't want them to ever feel like, well, you know, mama is not going to be honest with me. So I'm always forthcoming. You know, some things I don't share with them because it's inappropriate, but I'm always very, you know, forthcoming with them because that I want them to be able to think outside of just me. And so I think that as a parent, for me, I look at my children in the sense of the future that I see and how do I get them there. So every day I operate in those steps of them being successful and making sure that I do what I have to do to, I can't guarantee it, but hopefully guide them in the right direction to get there. And like my sister said, we had some really strong parents and grandparents, and especially my mother and my grandmother. And my grandmother is really the matriarch of our family. And I've always said that, you know, she was my hero. I didn't need anyone who had celebrity status to be a hero because watching her as a mother and all of her children and, oh, my goodness, I commended her. And, you know, one thing my grandmother would always tell me is you're just like me.
And I was, you know, kind of laughing off. But then I realized I am, and we all are just like her. She really molded us in a sense of motherhood and parenting to be that way and to love one another and, you know, teach our children the same thing and that togetherness with family and all of that. So I just think of mine in the sense of getting them to where they need to go, and at the same time trying to be sure that I'm following the guidelines that God would want me to, and not being a parent that I'm trying to think of the scripture that turns the child against me, because I have a tendency to, I'm straightforward, and I'm not playing no games with you, and I have to, you know, balance that. And so my older children, they got a little more than the younger ones because I was still in the phase of learning how to balance that. So I always think of, you know, that too when I'm guiding them, to keep that balance so that I'm not being the you know, being dictatorial or anything, or, you know, be authoritarian, but still remain the parent.
Yes, ma'am. All right. That's Man, remind me of my house. But I ain't going to get into that. This is not a top meet tonight. Sister Sydney.
Yes, sir. Sorry, I have to put you on mute. I have four kids and two dogs and a cat, so we have a lot going on here.
No, I know. I understand, and I appreciate everyone that is being, I mean, look how orderly this is. I mean, this is just, that's how I know, you know, this is, when it says that you are the mother of civilization, I'm talking to all of y'all, this is evidence of it right here. All these things going on, you took time out of you all's busy schedule and day to come and spend time with me and the listening audience, and it just rolled it smooth. It's a testament to your power. I mean, and take that. Yes, the same question to you. How does one parent, or in your view, how do you parent?
How do I parent? I've taken a lot of things from my mom, but there are a lot of things as well that maybe when I was younger, I didn't really agree with, and I just kind of thought when I have kids, I'll do things a little different. So my mom was kind of like a dictator. It's kind of the, you know, do as you're told. I don't want to hear anything back. Whereas I'm not that way, because I always want to know how my children are feeling, because I don't think that sometimes I think myself as a parent, I might tell them to do something and they, you know, I don't ever want them to be afraid to tell me, well, you know, I don't really think, or I don't really feel like, or, you know, just I like to keep the lines of communication open. I don't ever want them to feel uncomfortable about me anything. So here, we talk about it, whatever it is, whether we're outside and we see something that, let's say, because I live in L.A., so there are a lot of prostitution going on the street, and I use every situation as a means to talk about it, whatever it is. I need for them to have an understanding about what is going on in the world, what is going on in our household, not too much like about bills or anything like that that might, you know, cause stress on them, but just the world that we live in. This is a crazy place. So my parenting, I'm more vocal. We have open lines of communication. There's discipline as well. However, I'm more of a talker than anything.
Yes, ma'am. Praise be to Allah. Well, now that we've really laid the base for this, this is, earlier I mentioned a statistic that talked about the fact, and like I say, and this is not a thing of, and so that people understand, this is not anything this show is not designed to be against, quote unquote, anyone. However, I read the scriptures, I study the scripture, and the scripture tells me charity begins at home. Well, my home is my community, and my community is the black community. And that being the case, that's more specifically what I'm going to deal with, what we're going to deal with here. And like I said, in the statistics that I looked at, it said that in the black community, 75% of the homes are single parent homes, which means majority of the time that means that there is no father in the home. Now, that can have devastating effects. See, I know for myself in my own personal experience in my life, my mother and father parted company when I was 4 years old. Just to tell the truth about it. My mother had been introduced to Islam when she was carrying me, pregnant with me. And she accepted it then, however, she didn't necessarily go into the mosque proper. However, she told my father that that's what she was going to do, and that if he didn't go along with it, then it was goodbye. And she meant that, and that's exactly what happened. He was gone. But as I was coming up, my mother made sure she never, no man ever just came and lived in our house. She married, but she made sure she kept a male figure in front of us to show us what a man was, you know. And so I believe that is part of what helped me in my development. I'm sure it did. The other thing is this, is that I see so many individuals, mothers, raising their children on their own. And then I see all of the decadence that has run rampant in our community. And you hear individuals trying to portray us as if we have no morals. And I know that's not right. So, but before we move on into the next question that I'm going to ask, Queen Aziza, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum. Did you,
alaikum,
you have a comment or something that you wanted to add?
Oh, no, I was just going to answer your questions.
As far, oh, okay, well, then how does one parent? You tell me. How do you parent?
Oh, well, I am so not the person to answer that question. I was a very strong disciplinarian because my husband was more nurturing. He really didn't have that rod of discipline. He just pretty much wanted the children to be carefree, happy, go lucky, you know, whatever. Okay, but I knew I was number one, I had two sons. Number two, I had two black sons. So that wasn't going to be the case. And so we kind of switched roles, so to speak. He was the nurturer. I was the disciplinarian. You know, I put it like this. Minister Farrakhan gave a perfect example. He said that you cannot communicate with a child in the animalistic stage of life. So I had a very low tolerance for misbehaving. But by the time, I would say that my oldest was 7 years old, I didn't have to use such a heavy hand of discipline, because when he was at the age where we could communicate and he understood the language, then that part was easy to cease with. You know, I didn't have to do that. But I was very firm in raising them. You know, there were very few lines that were crossed in my home. And even though now my oldest son is 32, my twins that are born girl are 28 years old, they're still that line that they know not to cross, you know. So that was established early on. You know, my children, they don't drink or smoke. And if you ask either one of them now, who they all live in their own houses and they pay their own bills, they'll say, man, if my mama catch me smoking, she'll kill me, because I made them believe that thing, you know. And so it was that kind of establishment that I think
kept them out of trouble because, you know, praise God, all praises due to Allah, I have yet to have a child go to jail. I have yet to have a child on probation. I have yet to be in court for anything illegal or otherwise with my children. And I didn't have many issues with them in school. You know, they say you got to put the fear of God in children, and that's exactly what I did. Now, but on the other hand, I'm a grandmother of a seven-year-old, and I'm just such a punk because he gets away with everything. So go figure.
Yes, ma'am.
What? What can I say?
Like I said, this is not about me tonight. This is not about me tonight. Now, what I want to do, and I'm going to start with you, Sister Sydney, with this. This is my, because what I was speaking about before Queen Aziza came in, we were talking about the single, I was mentioning the single parent home. The thing is this. There's a term out there that's used that I don't particularly appreciate the term. However, it could be true. We'll see. But there's a term out there that's used quite constantly, and the term is deadbeat dad. And we're going to get into that. What you know, I want to ask you, Sister Sydney, first. A deadbeat dad, I mean, what is that?
I think that according to society, it would be the man that's having the children not trying to take care of them, not just not take care of them, but not do anything for them, nothing, like they don't exist. I believe that's what they consider a deadbeat dad.
Yes, ma'am. And how do you, I mean, and along with that, I mean, how do you view an individual? How do you view an individual like that? You know, what is your take on that? I mean, you know, I mean, how do you think that should be handled?
Honestly, I have a few that society would call deadbeat dad. However, I have no idea. I don't label them that. I think that they're broken men. Something somewhere went terribly wrong, and the children are paying for it. I try not to put a label on them. I'm prayerful that eventually they'll get it right, and I try to keep talking to my children to let them know not to, for their hearts not to be hardened, that people go through things, even grown-ups, and though we don't have the answers for it, things can always turn around. Just keep believing.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And Sister Victoria, to you the same question. I mean, what is a deadbeat dad? I mean, what is this? I mean, what are some of the characteristics of what they call a deadbeat dad?
Okay. To me, a deadbeat dad is a man who hasn't accepted his role as a parent. A lot of men forget that, you know, it took two to make that child. It takes two to raise that child. So, you know, the woman shouldn't be left with the full responsibility. It could be a man that's in the home. He could be outside of the home. He may see his kids on Father's Day or Christmas, or he may not see his kids at all. But he just totally makes excuses for why he doesn't or why he claims he can't, although we're not able to make those excuses. We have to do what we have to do regardless. You know, he just doesn't seem to care. You know, he doesn't sacrifice the way a parent should. You know, parents sacrifice regardless of how they feel or what's going on or how much money they have. You know, something's going to have to be sacrifice in order to make sure that child is taken care of. The child comes first. And so I feel like a deadbeat dad doesn't understand that. And that could even be a man that's in the home who doesn't take his role seriously, or, you know, doesn't spend his time to mold that child as he should. He doesn't understand how much his part, how important his role is.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. All right. And Sister Chosen, the floor is yours.
Well, I'm going to get in my feelings for a minute.
Go right ahead.
Because, you know me, I'm going to just keep it real. I can't stand them. I got to answer the second question first. I absolutely cannot stand them. I have absolutely no understanding in my mind how you can look at a child that is of your blood and not do right by them. So, and especially, I've seen some men who've come from a family where their father wasn't there, and you know what it feels like not to have your father there, and you don't step up to the plate for your own. And I go back a little bit to say, I do have an understanding that because they did not have a father in the home, sometimes they don't know how to fit into that role, but at least try. Sure. And a lot of times I don't see the trying, and I'm going to stick to our people. Our children are suffering. I'm going to go back to those statistics that you mentioned earlier. 75% of the families are single-family homes, and these children are being raised by mostly women alone, and especially, you know, the boys. Girls need their father just as much. A little girl should grow up knowing that she's a princess and being taught how to be treated by a man, first by her father. And if she doesn't know how to be treated by a man, learning that from her own father, then sometimes she's out looking for something from someone else, or not realizing that, you know, there are certain things that she deserves from a man. So for me, I have no sympathy for him. And I know you know me, I'm going to be honest. I don't. I have no sympathy. I can't fathom that, because as a mother, and as a mother who has experienced a father who's not there, who's not doing, who doesn't even try, and I've given opportunity after opportunity, and, you know, and I can only coach you so much. Your parents should have done that, and it's only so much that I can do. And try to help you save face with your children, after a while, I can't do that no more. You got to step up to the plate. And that motherly role, the disciplinarian starts to kick in and say, hey, look, I got to show you a few things, because this is where you are and this is what you're doing. And your children are suffering because of that, and I can't allow you to continue to make them hurt. You got to get your stuff together. Because they deserve better than that. And if we all, you know, we all don't step up to the plate, but we all want something for ourselves, we should also want even better for our children. And that's just how I feel.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Like I said, this is that's what this forum is for us to bring these things out, bring these issues up, and then we're going to get to some solutions. Now, mm-hmm. I see somebody has their hand up out there, so if you all don't mind, I'm going to area code 813. 813, your mic is live.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Kareem.
Wa alaikum salam.
Dear brother, I tuned in, of course, because I always want to support your show and your effort.
Thank you.
To establish this forum when people can express themselves very relevant on very relevant issues. I was a bit conflicted, though, brother, because this is a subject that is so dear to my heart. And tonight I had resolved, when I saw it on Facebook, I had resolved, I don't feel like being sad tonight. You know, I don't feel like having to hear and go over statistical information that points to our neglect and or abuse of our children. So I wasn't going to tune in, but I said, well, let me tune in. So I'm here, brother, and quite frankly, I just tuned in. I don't know who your guest is. I want to greet her with the greeting words of peace, of assalamu alaikum, and I'd like to listen further so that I can intelligently make a contribution if such I desire to do. So if you don't mind, at this point, I would just like to listen more and get more information, and then perhaps if I have something to contribute, then I will, with the help of Allah. But I wanted to tune in to support you and to listen to this really deep and just really touching to me information regarding our children.
Yes, sir. All praise is due to Allah. And that's our beloved brother, student minister James Muhammad. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. And that's just fine, sir. You know me, I don't waste time. I appreciate your support. And we're gonna move on and move into this.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam.
Yes, sir. All right. Now, Queen Aziza, are you there? I'm sure. I know you are. I mean, do you have a moment?
Yes, sir, I do.
Yes, ma'am. And again, like I said, that terminology that they put out there, you know, deadbeat dad. Okay. I mean, what? What is that?
Well, let me say this. The first of all, let's go off into the history of a deadbeat dad. A deadbeat dad is what, how can I put it? Your government made. Let's just keep it real. The government made a deadbeat dad because during the time when the New Deal came about and welfare was established, for poor people, poor families, men and women who during the time of the Depression and thereafter who could not make ends meet. However, at some point, they decided, your government decided that, okay, we'll give the money to the women and the children, but the man has to be extracted from the household in order for the woman to qualify. So now you leave a woman in a position to where she has to choose between keeping her family together, keeping her man in the house, or feeding her children. And a lot of times in that situation, what happened early on is that men would leave the house so that the children and the wife could eat. Now, we're talking about the 20s and the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But it became a systematic practice, especially among black people, because the system trying to keep the black man down has never changed.
Mm.
So unemployment, as it is now, it was then, was astronomical in the black community. Black men turned to the streets. They turned to hustling. They turned to gambling. They turned to pimping. They turned to whatever they turned to. And in that shaping of that character of a black man, that black man did not return home to his children because he was being other than self. Or he got so far off into what he was doing that being a husband, being a father, having that responsibility far escaped him because now he's in another life. And so a lot of times this is where that pattern started, and it just manifested on throughout the years. So now you have generations of children who have grown up without fathers, and they grow up to be fathers, and it is a common natural practice to them to be absent of the household. Because you have to look at that most of the children who are raised without fathers, their fathers was raised without fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has perpetuated throughout the years. So the term deadbeat dad and the design of deadbeat dad was by design, period. It's not a man's nature to abandon his family. But if you want to go back a little further, they did it in slavery.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They did it in slavery. When the slave masters brought the black man over here, they used him as a book, which means that he was the one who would go, he would impregnate several women, and he wasn't with any of them. Well, why was he doing that? Because if he was strong and big and brawn, they figured he could reproduce strong, big, and brawn young men or young women, and so they allowed him to impregnate women, and he wasn't with any one particular woman because slaves were a commodity. So this term and this man was a made man, but that is not the nature of our men. But it has been so designed that the women of yesterday and the women of today don't understand the nature of that particular man. But that man was made. Our government made that man. And that's what I wanted to share, Brother Kareem.
Yes, ma'am. All praise to Allah. Actually, you've already answered my next question.
I'm sorry.
You have nothing to be sorry about. This is how we roll. You know, this is how we roll now. All right. And so I'm going to Sister Victoria. I know, we have to give everybody time.
Yes.
Everybody's doing what they do. You know, and that's a beautiful thing. Sister Victoria, you there yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. And as I said, Queen Aziza, from her viewpoint, has answered my next question. However, the next question, and to you first, is what effect has slavery had on our ability to properly raise our children, in your view?
You know, a lot of what she said I had no clue of, but it did make me think about the first thing they would do was separate the families and take the men away from their wives and their children. And it seems like since then, that's just been it's been perpetual, the men being taken out of the home for whatever reason, to the point where now it's like men don't know how to be in the home. And to me, that was my take on it. I didn't know much about what she said. That was very enlightening for me, but I always did feel like, you know, they took the men out of the home and, you know, the men never came back.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that being the case, so you would say it most definitely had, what, a negative effect on us being able to properly raise our children?
Most definitely.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Brother Kareem, can I still be heard?
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to be sure. Well, when I get an opportunity after the speaker speaks, I'd like to address that question.
That won't be a problem, sir. I'm going to defer to Sister Sydney first, and then you may certainly weigh in after that, brother. No problem.
Thank you.
Sister Sydney, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Like I said, you know, I really appreciate y'all courtesy. And like I said, the question is, what effect has slavery had on our ability to properly raise our children?
Well, I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm learning so much just listening. Because I had no idea. Like, it makes so much sense what the other sister was saying about in the 20s, how, you know, the men had to leave so we'd be able to feed our families. However, I never I never even thought about it. So I'm just being enlightened. I at a loss for words, to be honest with you.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, this is Conscious Black Nation, and that's what this is about. We all learn from one another because, again, like I said, this show is about solutions. The student minister, James Muhammad, you said that you wanted to weigh in?
Yes, sir, I did. And, of course, prefacing all of our statements in the name of Allah, with the help of Allah. And, again, I greet all of you. Assalamu alaikum. I want to support and underscore what Sister Queen Aziza stated regarding forcing the man under the guise of help to the family, the wife or the mother and child, forcing the man out of the home. My experience as a property manager for Project Housing, I did that for a little over 10 years here in Tampa, and some of what they would call the worst and most deprived housing projects in the city of Tampa. And, of course, she's exactly right. That not only happened in the 20s, but it was reinstated very recently in the last few years, laws, rules, and regulations that stipulated if the man was present, the woman could not get help. No consideration as to the ability of the man to get a job of any consequence, to hold down a job. No consideration of the lack of training the man may have had. He had to literally stay away from his child and the mother of his child that the woman could have housing. This is an actual law throughout public housing. So you're absolutely right. They forbid and prohibit the man from being present to be an example to his child, to be a support to his child. So he has to, under the cover, give support. But what kind of effect does that have on a man who has to go out there and deal with the realities of getting money any way he can and then is deprived of nurturing the child, fathering the child, being an example of the child? Interest becomes depleted. Concern and care wane and waxes until it is totally deteriorated. But I want to talk about, so she's absolutely right. I just wanted to support her statement. But I want to talk about a lecture the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan gave some years back that was afterwards printed in the Final Call newspaper. It dealt with the process of slave making and a term he called psychological freezing. And what that was that the master or the slave maker would bring the black man out in front of his woman, in front of his children, particularly his male children, and then subject that man to a helpless condition and then beat him within an inch of his life, destroy him physically, and in that destruction, the mother looking at his helplessness, the man, the child looking at his father's helplessness, the woman knowing that the father and the man is supposed to be that one who maintains her and protects her, but witnesses that he cannot protect himself, therefore how could he protect her and her child? And what it did was evoke so much fear in the woman for the safety of her male child that she became what the minister called psychologically frozen. She knew she had to teach the boy to grow up to be a man, strong, disciplined, and defending of his family, but she also knew the consequences of a strong black man standing against the master at that time. So what did she do? She raised her male child and made him weak, told him to be quiet, told him not to fight master, told him to go through life with his head hung down so that he could safely get through life just to save his life. And so young men today grow up that way. And you will find that men of 30 and 40 and 50 and sometimes older still calling on mama to pay the rent when they can't pay it, calling on mama to pay the water bill, the light bill, when they can't pay it. And this is a residual effect of the way the woman in her psychologically frozen state during actual slavery raised her child. Now, they would like to say that the black man has no excuse today. That was then, and this is now. They have a point to some degree, but the hypocrisy of the American government and the American white racist society is that they close all of the meaningful avenues of economic expression in modern times, close it off, so that a black man has to run twice as fast and twice as far to get the same kind of compensation and job that a white person gets. No job. Racial oppression and discrimination. And then open up the floodgates for drugs to come in and make drugs so easily accessible. They cannot tell us that they cannot spy on who is bringing drugs into the country when they have satellites hundreds of miles in space that could beam down on a car on the earth and read a license plate. You cannot make me believe that you can't see who's smuggling drugs into the country and how they get into the neighborhood. So they close off jobs. And the only thing they open up to the young black brother is a job at McDonald's or a job at Wendy's for a minimum wage, and then flood the airwaves through TV with commercials advertising Mercedes and Lexuses and other fine, luxurious material things, and the poor brother knowing that he can't get a Lexus or a Mercedes with a $7 an hour job or $5 an hour job, he's forced then psychologically to go out and get into the drug world. This is the kind of hypocrisy of the government. And then they want to get down on the black brother that he's shiftless and that he's lazy. So it's working against him. But on the other side of that coin, and I'll close, is that when the black man gets the knowledge of self, and through that knowledge, the love of self, the respect of self, then like minds can come together in a collective manner and pull their resources, nickels, dimes, and dollars together to establish business of their own. But first there must be a clear-cut, thorough teaching of the knowledge of self and the reestablishment of the love and respect for self, and then brothers will and sisters will support self. There's a way out of all of this. But we don't want the enemy, with his deadbeat dad, to escape his culpability in this whole scheme. Yes, there are brothers that are not responsible, that make babies and then let the government take care of them. But that, again, is as a result of the residual effect of slavery, where for 300 years you have a black man forced to go into women indiscriminately and then forced away from the responsibility of taking care of the child and the children that he produced. After a while, it becomes habitual. And this is part and parcel of why you see what is happening in the black community today. So I just wanted to say that in support of my sister's statement and in support of my black brothers who just need to be taught. Yes, they need to be responsible. And while I'm saying that, on the other hand, sisters, you have to be responsible as well. Your standards have to be higher than what they are. You cannot let the pain of loneliness and the absence of a man allow you to lower your standards that you will not hold the man accountable to earning you and the right to access to you and what God has put in you for the man. You raise your standard, I guarantee you the black man will raise his standard, because we ain't going nowhere without you. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's teaching has the answer to all of this. An in-depth and thorough knowledge of self. So I thank you for allowing me to say that, Brother Kareem. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, sir. Wa alaikum salam. Thank you, Brother Student Minister James Muhammad. All right, I'm going to get to my other panelists in just a moment. However, we do have another question. Actually, we got two more questions, so I'm going to take the individual that's been on the hold in as long so long, and I appreciate your patience. Area code 213, you have a question or comment? Area code 213. Area code 213. Okay, I guess you don't. Well, thank you for tuning in. All right. Area code 706. You have a question or comment? Area code 706. Going once. Going twice, three times. Yep. Area code 706. Are you there? All right. To Sister Vanessa.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. All right. Now, my question to you is, I know I keep putting you on the hot seat, but I know you don't mind. The next question is, we're going to go around the table. At this time, and based on the information we have, all right, in your view, okay, you know, and we're talking about a critique, you know, not a criticism. And see, a lot of people get those confused, and I know in the dictionary they try to say that critique and criticism is the same thing. No, they're not. Criticism, because there's no such thing as, what do they call it? Positive criticism or constructive criticism. There's no such thing. Because criticism is an attack on a person's character, period. That's criticism. A critique is seeing a situation for what it is, both the negative and the positive, and offering guidance in how to better oneself. They try to make them out to be the same, but they're not. And so that being the case, what we're looking at, what we want to look at is the critique. Okay, and this is the question, in your view today, what is wrong with the black man?
Oh, goodness. What is wrong?
I know. With...
you know, referee.
Y'all know I don't fool no question.
Yeah, you would choose me.
it's going around the board now.
Collectively, I won't say that there's really something wrong with the black man. I think that there's a lot of psychological breakdown that goes back to your last question and answer that has, over the years, there's a certain pattern, there's a certain understanding that's been instilled in all of us and the black man. And so I would not per se say that there is something wrong with the black man, but within us we have to be able to accept that there are some psychological issues that we need to bring to the forefront and address. So that becomes the point where you have to be real with self and you have to let go of those stereotypes that say we shouldn't seek help. We shouldn't talk about the things that bother us. That we should, you know, just carry on through life and just be all right. You know, when you hide stuff up, you sweep things up under a rug, eventually you start to see that your rug is starting to lift up a bit because even though it's under the rug, it's still there. And the more you sweep up under the rug, the higher your pile is going to get. And I think that that's what we tend to do. And we have to, I would say, for my black brothers that I know that are in my circle that I'm able to see, is let go of, you know, what your friends expect of you, what society expects of you, and start to do those things that God expects of you. Because we don't look to him, I think, and during those times as, this is my guide, and this is what I should be following. We follow our friends. We follow what the media says. We follow the things that have been instilled in us that are not always on a positive level. So we have to find a way to get away from those things and embrace some positive healing. So, you know, counseling or whatever we want to call it, you can counsel with another brother who is, you see, has gotten past the struggle and or is getting past the struggle still. We have to be able to admit those things. And I think sometimes for us that is one of the hardest parts, just admitting that there are some issues that we need to deal with and bring to the forefront and cut them off, because I'm one of those people, I look at it like I don't have problems, I have solutions. So what are we going to do to get past this? You know, I see the problem. It's obvious to see the problem, but what are we going to do to get past it? And so if you know, I just use this as an example, if you know that you're at it, you know you can't go hang out with your friends at club hopping and doing all this stuff. You know, there's certain things that you have to say. At this point, I can't do this. I'm not strong enough to be around these people. I have to do something different. And I think with our brothers, they're going to have to realize that something I have to do different.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you so much for bravely going where no one probably wants to go. However, everybody's going to have to go there. And, all right, we do have quite a few people who want to weigh in. Area code 213, your mic is live.
Alaikum.
Wa alaikum
salam. This is Yahya Muhammad. It's good to hear the family voice on this radio station. I'm happy to be here with you. I can bear witness to my sister Queen Aziza, really testimony of our history, because I grew up also in the South, in Alabama, where this I say this scheme was polarized, even as a little boy, and they are very serious about that polarization. They put a picture up, and they want us to fit that description. They want to fit that picture. And when they come and visit my mom's house, when they came to visit my mom's house, they were looking for a telephone, they were looking for a man, they were looking for a TV. After a while, the picture changed on the billboard. You know, this is a government to these families. You know, first, you can have a TV, you can have a telephone, you better not have a man. But after a while, they got, you know, the picture got better, so they were able to have these things. And that was the whole scheme. And they have another polarization here in 2013, I won't go into, but however, I would like to just remind my brothers and sisters that there is hope. There's a reform on the scene in the Most Honorable Louis Farrakhan, and our teaching of our Father, Most Honorable Louis Farrakhan.
Yes, sir. Wa alaikum salam. Thank you. Thank you. All right, I'm going to take one more question, and please, everybody that has a hand up, I'm going to get to you. We'll get to you most definitely. Before I do that, Queen Aziz, is there anyone in the chat room that has their hand up?
No, sir, not at this time, but I want to remind them that if there are questions Please type them in, and we will ask them on your behalf. But I think
yes,
they're
ma'am.
Just talking amongst themselves right now.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, I'm going to take one more question, and we're going to get back to our panel.
Fuck you, nigger.
Fuck,
nigger. Fuck, shit. Fuck.
Okay, devil.
Hey.
Now.
What is that?
There's somebody up here that, they got his names up here. So, evidently, since I don't see phone numbers, I'm going to say this. If you are calling in to try to upset us and disturb us, that's not going to happen. We're going to continue to move forward and solve our problem. If you have a problem with us, I suggest you take that up with your guy. Now, moving forward from that point, Sister Victoria.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
It's your turn. It's your turn. in
okay.
your view, as quickly as you can, in your view, what would you say is wrong with the black man? And I know that, and I'm not saying that to be negative, but in other words, we have issues that we
right.
need to address. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would say after all we've discussed in this past hour with all the circumstances that the black man does face, I would say at this point in time, the black man has been emasculated, demoralized. His he has arrested development. He is godless. He doesn't even know who his God is. I'm sorry. My baby has cold. He doesn't know who his God is. He's kind of caught up in the ways of this world and has gotten away from his purpose. That's pretty much, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. All right. And Sister Sydney, same question.
After all the enlightenment that I've gotten in this hour, I think he needs to be reeducated. And as opposed to putting him down and calling him the deadbeat, and although we know that he isn't doing everything he's supposed to do, I say keep praying for him and rooting for him and trying to help reeducate him into the right things to do, as opposed to putting him down like society is constantly doing. That's what I say.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. I see somebody that's been holding it quite a while. I'm definitely got to get out of here. They just don't want us to continue to talk.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I can.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. And everyone, please forgive us for that technical difficulty. All right, well, I lost the other individual, whoever that was, or whatever that was. So what we're going to do is move right on. And since we have you on the line, Queen Aziza, my question to you, starting with you, is, now, what is wrong with the black woman?
Ah!
Wow, I think I would have been better asking what's wrong with the black man, answering that one. Oh, well, you know, in all honesty, I think I'm going to kind of refer back to what Student Minister James Muhammad said when he talked about the standard. Black women have to hold the standard, but let me do this. Let me just say what I really want to say, and then I'll answer your question. when you ask what was wrong with the black man, I want to say that a lot of what's wrong with the black man is us, the black woman. And the reason why I say that is because we as women have lost sight of the value of our own black men. We don't see the value in our black men anymore. And so as we raise our children, our young sons, in our own way, unknowingly, we devalue them in how we raise them, because we don't have or we don't see the hero in our black men. So we don't refer our children or compare our children or put in front of our children men from our community. We'll put Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, Michael Vick, Mike Tyson in front of them, but not our own black men. And all of that behavior goes back to slavery. But you have to remember that the black woman, as you mentioned earlier, is the mother of civilization. Well, what is a mother? A mother is one that molds a child. So when that child comes out of the womb, she molds that child. And so by the time a child is 6 years of age, his or her personality is formed. And so if the forming of that personality has been negative, then the child's outlook and development of how he or she looks at him or herself, how he or she looks at her society, that is also going to be negative. So what's wrong with the black man, Brother Kareem, is that the black woman has forgotten her place and she has forgotten her man. The black woman is the one that has the ability to exalt a man to his position. The black woman is the one that sets the standards of the behavior of the black man, because we are the jewel. And if we allow us to be valued, allow ourselves to be valued as we are, and stop making the jewel so easily available, then the man will meet the standard to get the jewel. What's wrong with us? We put the jewel out on Front Street. We give the jewel away and then wonder why the man doesn't appreciate it, because he didn't have to dig for the gold. He didn't have to dig for the diamond. You gave it to him. He didn't have to work for nothing. And that is our mindset. Well, where did that mindset come from? Because we are the mothers. And when they say we are the mother of civilization, it does not mean that you can't teach a man because, number one, he's not your child and, you know, he's a grown man. That's not true. We birth a nation, and we have that initial responsibility from the womb to nurture the mind of a man and of a child, a little girl or whatever. We have that responsibility. So the problem with the black man mostly is us. And the problem with the black woman is that she has lost the view of her man. She has lost the view of God himself, because a woman is not even looking for God in a man anymore. And you have to follow the true desire of your heart. When you see a woman with a thug, when you see her with a pimp, when you see her with a drug addict, she's not looking for the God in the man. And so you get with a devil, you reproduce a devil, and then you wonder why your children give you so much hell, because look what you have reproduced into the future. You won't even hold your man to a higher standard to have you. You can't hold your children to a higher standard. So we have to take that role seriously when they say we are the mother of civilization. That means minus the savagery, minus the devilment, minus the evil, if we are going to be the mothers of civilization, we need to take that thing seriously. I'm not going to let a man come to me any kind of way. And I'm not going to let my male children act any kind of way. They're 30 years old. But my children cannot act any kind of way, even now. We are the mothers of civilization. And that doesn't stop when the child is 18. And it doesn't stop because you go from one man to the other. If you got to train him too, then you train him too. But you train him in the way of presenting him the standard that God set for all of us, and hold him to that standard and hold yourself to that standard. But the man is not going to do it if we don't do it. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. All right, I'm going to pose that same question to Sister Victoria.
Okay, I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And like I said, I just want to say again, I appreciate you all muting the phones. However, it just shows, I mean, see, you all are performing your duty, even in the midst of taking time out of your busy life to be here with us. And I thank you for that. We thank you for that. But like I say, the question is, and like I say, this is not a criticism but a critique, you know, because the time is winding down as swiftly as you can. What do you see is, what is wrong with the black woman? Because we want to have some time.
Well, you know what? The sister that just spoke before me, I think she laid it out there, and I really have nothing to add.
All right.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. I'm sorry.
You don't have to be sorry. I mean, you say with two or more gathered in my name that I am in the mix. And, you know, and if we're in agreement,
yeah, we're in agreement.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. I second that.
Yes, ma'am. Sister Sydney.
Yes, sir. I share her feelings. I so thirst that. It's like, what more can you say after that?
Okay.
There's
so,
really
so we
nothing
got a third.
Else
we got
to
go second and third, right?
Yes, sir.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, shut
beautiful.
It down. That is the problem. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, now I'm going to go to Sister Chosen. Can you put some icing on that cake?
Say that again, Brother Kareem. I didn't get the last part.
I said, Sister Chosen, did you hear the question?
I did hear the question. And
I was saying, can you put some icing on that cake?
I will. I'm going to start by saying that we realize, or we should realize, the same system, the same mindset, the same psychological breakdown that's worked against the black man has also worked against the black woman, because the black man didn't go through slavery by himself. He went through slavery with the woman. He also went with the family. The entire family went through slavery, and the breakdown began there. The black woman has not separated from that completely. We are still, in a sense, dealing with that breakdown too. When you think about when men were brought out in front of their families, and not just the children, and they were whipped, They were whipped in front of their wives. They were taken and separated away from their wives. Their wives were taken by masters and forced to have children. And here, psychologically, the woman is not feeling protected, even though she's realizing the situation that the two of them are in or their family is in, that loss of protection, being protected by her man, has carried over. That need for safety has carried over. The same system throughout the years has changed and I won't say changed, let's say evolved in the sense of how we have been pulled apart. When the women's movement started, women were pulled out of the homes to go and work. Well, that's where I think that I got this attitude has come from, because women make money, they can get out and go get better jobs, a lot of times a lot better jobs than our brothers can, because I like to think, and I'd say this because this is my opinion, that, you know, that white society fears the black man, and it's easier to put the black woman in a position and pay her a little less than they know they may possibly have to pay the black man. And, you know, we develop this attitude, I got this, I don't need you. The same system of welfare is still breaking down the family, because then it was you can't be in the same house. Now it's if you want support from us, you have to be willing to cooperate. Cooperate means you have to give us the father's name. And the only way that you're going to get this support is if you give us the father's name. If you're not willing to do that, you have to say that you fear for your safety and your children's safety. And that's the only way that we're not going to go after the father. So this same system is still working against us. And then we, too, are working against ourselves, because back to what Queen said, you got to learn how to step your standard and forget all of these things that have happened to you over the years, and at some point heal. And when you begin to heal, you realize that the person you should be loving the most outside of God is self. And when you love yourself enough, no one can come along and love you less than you love you. If you allow somebody to come along and love you less than you love yourself, then that's a problem. And if you don't love yourself enough to realize you allow someone to treat you less than that, you have to really start doing some building within yourself. You can't. We can, but you can't sit and cut yourself and realize that and not realize that you're hurting. And that's in a sense what we've been doing. We're bleeding out, and we just because a lot of us don't want to be lonely, or we don't want our children to be without, so we make this makeshift family that doesn't always stick, and it doesn't always work. The glue doesn't always stick together. And we have to at some point get in your corner and say, look, I can do me by myself for a minute so I can figure out what it is that I really want and what I really deserve. If we don't know what we deserve from ourselves, if you don't know how to treat yourself, no one else that comes along is going to be able to treat you better, because they will see that you're going to allow them to treat you less than that. And we have to get a stronger mind, because a lot of the things that we do, it plays into our relationship. And you can't have a great relationship that can build with someone if they look at you and say, well, hey, she was already out there like that. She let me come in and do this. A brother will not respect that. And he's looking for the next best thing to come along. And we have to realize that and admit that. We put so much out there. I mean, as far as our bodies, as far as everything that is to adorn ourselves in the sight of men, and forgetting the main thing that we have is our heart and our mind. So I think for all of us, We have to, that love, that sense of love, you've got to love yourself. If you cannot love yourself, No one else can love you. They can love you, but you won't understand that love.
Yes, ma'am.
You can't you really accept that love. And I'm going to get off.
Beautiful.
Because I came, because I had to come to that realization. And I remember there's a young lady, she's still on my page, and she amazed me because I wrote her something one day, and she reposted it. And this was over a year ago. She reposted it to me. And she told me, I go back and I read this often because we did an event. And I was standing, and I don't know what made me say it, but I told everyone in there, I said, you have to learn how to love yourself. And she said, why are you smiling? So, you know, she thought I had this relationship going on. I said, I'm not in a relationship. I'm in a relationship with myself. I said, let me tell you something, sweetheart. I learned how to love me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and if nobody can come along and do me better than I do me, get out my face. And that's just how I feel. If you cannot love me more than I love me, then you don't deserve this. And let's not even pretend and play games. Let's move on. So it's a certain level that you have to get with loving yourself and not accept something less than you know that you already deserve, because that's just you setting up a whirlwind of trouble, and that cycle starts all over again. And unfortunately, when someone's not there and arrived at that same point that you have, you're going to go through hell trying to teach them that. It doesn't mean that they're not teachable, and if you're willing to do that, then, you know, then you go right ahead. But you're going to go through hell to teach that lesson, and you have to be ready for that, and that's what you have to say. Am I prepared to do this? Am I going to be willing to stick it out? Is that what I really want? And we have to really do that with ourselves. Just be honest. And I'm going to get off. I said I was. I am this time.
No, ma'am. Thank you, sister. You're preaching to the choir. And your answer actually segues into, because now we're down into the last 23 minutes of the show. And like I said, we never want to leave it, although there have been some positive things. We actually want to get to leaving the people, leaving everyone, all of us, with practical solutions, practical applications as to how we alleviate this situation. And we are down to the last question of the night. I'm going to start with Sister Sydney. Give you a chance to bring your mic up.
Yes, sir.
What must we do individually and collectively to remove the division between us that is destroying our families?
After all the knowledge that I've gained in this hour and a half or so, I would say, one, that we have to love ourselves more, that's the men and the women. By doing that, I think that we will have a whole lot more strength, and, of course, we'd be bringing children into the world that would love themselves, and we will be able to teach them how to love. Because hearing this, there are a lot of things I never even thought about. I didn't even fathom it. So now it's kind of like, instead of kind of ripping the Band-Aid off, I know what to put on it, you know what I mean, to make it properly heal. So now I understand that we have to love ourselves more. That could be the reason why I have been in this situation, which is why I'm guessing the men that have been chosen, or that chose me, or however you want to say it, which is why we've been in this situation. So I would say love ourselves more, get educated, pick up the Quran, pick up the Bible. Let's read. Let's learn together. That's what I say.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you very much. Sister Victoria.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Same question. Okay. We're talking about practical application now. And as she said, we have to learn to love ourselves. But how do we do that? What are the actions that we take? Because love is an action word.
I think how we can begin to love ourselves is understanding how our God loves us and who we are in His sight, how He created us. He created us in His image, understanding who we are to Him and how
he sent his son to die for us. We be important. And the way he forgives us, as much as we mess up, I mean, it's like, wow, you know, and with all the things that I've done, if he could forgive me, I know I have to forgive myself, you know, and I have to forgive others because he's the ultimate judge. So I think, you know, when we understand who he is to us and who we are to him, we can love ourselves better. We can start with ourselves, and then we can begin to love others and teach our kids to love, you know. I think love conquers all. If everyone was to love each other, we would understand, you know, each other as a community, stick together as a community, come together as a community, we would be so much further ahead. That's all we're missing is love from each other rather than supporting outside of our community or, you know, tearing each other down the way we do, not wanting to see the other person get ahead. You know, if we just loved each other, we could just be so much better. But first we would have to start with who we are and who we are to God, who God is to us.
Ma'am, thank you. Thank you very much. All right, we're down to the last 19 minutes. I'm going to take some questions from our listening audience. Like I said, our time is very short, so if you would please be as concise. You know, we don't really want to limit you, but please be concise so that everybody can get in. I'm going to start with area code 706. Are you there?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow,
Lakeham Salam. I just wanted to comment on the last question that you had.
And yes, ma'am. Who are you?
My name is Sister Leilani X.
Yes, ma'am.
All
right. Go right ahead.
I just wanted to say that I think that our families, our black families, will be able to better ourselves and our relationships if we first know our history and we find out where the problems are coming from. And I'm sorry, I'm nervous.
Take your time. Don't it's all right.
When you mentioned the question, it made me think of the Willie Lynch syndrome and how we were taught to hate ourselves and how to put the men and the women against each other and the different tones of our people and how to reverse the roles of the man and the woman, and being that we do have the information out there that helps us realize how we got where we are now and how we can fix that. And that's really all I had to say.
Well, we want to thank you. You say Sister Leilani?
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. We want to thank you for your contribution, sister. You know, and please, stick with us. We're here every Monday at 8 p.m., but hang with us to the end of the show. You're going to get some real good news. But thank you again.
Yes,
assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Okay, next question is going to come from, or comment is going to come from area code 702. 702, your mic is live.
Assalamu alaikum, brother. Can you hear me?
Wa alaikum salam. Yes, sir, I can.
Oh, yes, sir. This is Brother Leon Muhammad from Las Vegas, brother.
Praise be to Allah. How you doing, black man?
Yes, sir. Mile 75. I'm doing wonderful, brother. All praises due to Allah.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, brother. I'm not for sure of all the panelists' names. What's your name, dear brother?
I'm Brother Kareem, brother. I'm the host.
Okay, Brother Kareem. I just want to say I'm in agreement 1,000%, brother. You know, I'm not new in the Nation of Islam. And
yes, sir.
So, you know, I bear witness, brother. Plus, brother, I thought the show was coming in on the 11th tomorrow, so I was sitting here eating some bean soup. And you have to excuse me, brother. It came down. Then I got a text message that you were on today. So I was like, oh, okay, let me tune in. So I caught most of it, you know what I'm saying? Most of the beautiful dialogue, brother, the intelligent, beautiful dialogue. So, I'm just calling in. I think Sister Queen Aziza Muhammad and Minister James,
sir.
I'm familiar. So I just wanted to say, and you to the host, I just wanted to say really a wonderful show, brother. And it's my first time calling in, so I will be calling back in. And keep up, brother, when I ain't nothing, brother. You know how that come down is. You know, I've been around for a while. You can check my record. So speaking on the woman, brother, I'm not going to speak on the woman. Like, you know, I'm not going to say anything, brother, but I just want to say a wonderful job, brother. I enjoy all the shows that's coming out of the Nation of Islam for the Internet, because I believe a lot of people are tuning in, and I know a lot of my friends that I'm on Facebook, Leon Cypher Muhammad, and my friends, you know, pushing in too, brother. So, you know, all praises due to Allah, brother, and keep up the wonderful work, and I will, you know, stay posted and contact y'all back when the shows are live, you know. So.
All praises due to Allah.
Yes,
thank
sir.
Thank you, Brother
Leon. Yes, sir, brother. All praises be to Allah. Allahu Akbar. I'm out.
Walaikum
yes,
salam.
Yes, sir. Walaikum.
Walaikum salam, Brother Leon.
Yes. Is that Sister Queen Aziza Muhammad, right?
Yes, sir. It's me.
Praise be to Allah. You know, so I'm just connecting, and because I'll be sending a lot of, you know, folks from Facebook, right on, so they can get this knowledge, you know?
I really appreciate your support, dear brother. It means so much to us. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. That's right. So, you know, we all one big family, and we want to get the rest of our family. And I believe it's going to be done. It's already been done. You got to do the work. So praise be to Allah. I'm going to get on out the way so y'all can continue with the show. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Leon, again.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, well, alaikum salam.
All right. And there's one more. I'm going to take that. It's from area code 213.
Walaikum.
Walaikum salam.
This is Brother Yahya Muhammad, brother. I got cut off a couple of minutes ago. But I'd like to just finally say I love my family. I love the topic. I'm in the mud. I'm a product of this syndrome, this problem, and also a grown man. I'm almost 50 years old, but by the grace of Allah, He has kept me alive and kept me functional as a father and as a son and as a brother. But I would like to just challenge the family with this, if you can hear me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
If I can challenge the family with this, and sir, I believe it's 103. It says in Al-Asr, some interpret it by the time, consider the time, but right now is the time when every man and woman, boy or girl, says will be in loss, will be thrown aside, left behind, just in total loss, except those whose beliefs are followed by righteous conduct. And the word I want to put in there is a broker, the interpretation, a broker of truth, and is a broker of patience. And I believe if our family, male and female, Muslim non-believers, would really take the challenge to become a broker of truth of the situation in ourselves, and a broker of patience. If we would take that challenge, brother, we would take that challenge and trust in Allah that He's going to win. Muhammad's going to win this. You know, we just got to grab onto that rope and pull on up on it. There's only one rope. Every other rope has snapped. But finally, I'd just like to thank my sister, Sister Queen Aziza, for inviting me. It's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. I will share this with my brothers and sisters that I come in contact with. And I'd like to finally just send a greeting to all the family that are listening or have not called in of Assalamu Alaikum. And I hope to talk to you soon again, brother.
Walaikum salam. Thank you, beloved.
Yes. And before we go further, because we're down to the last 10 minutes, I want to first, because I may not get a chance, I want to thank everybody
all in the listening audience, particularly our panel, Sister Sydney Walker, Sister Victoria Miller, always Sister Vanessa Chosen Marie, Brother Student Minister James Muhammad, and, of course, the illustrious Queen Aziza Muhammad, everybody for being here to help with this. And in our last 10 minutes, I want to start with Queen Aziza Muhammad, same question to you, and then I want to get, if he would, Student Minister James Muhammad, just to fill it out, but same question to you. What must we do individually and collectively to remove the division between us that is destroying our family? Queen Aziza first.
I'm gonna hearken it back on Sister Vanessa and say, you know, first, the love of self. The love of God, whichever God you serve, whether you're Christian, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Hindu, Buddhist, as long as you serve a righteous God, I think that's the first step. And then you have to love yourself. Second of all, I'm going to heart it back off my brother and refer to Surah 103. We have to enjoin one another to patience, enjoin one another to truth. But we have to also keep that truth for ourselves. And, you know, we have to stop acting out of desperation. We have to stop responding out of spontaneity. We have to get away from the cycle, the perpetual cycle that has taken us down this very, very dark road. And the only way we do that, Brother Kareem, is that we have to educate ourselves on knowledge of truth. We have so much knowledge out here, but we very seldom find time to verify what we say is truth. So if it does not come into fruition, if it's just a cliche saying, you know, that does not mean that it's true. We have to find the evidence of that truth and then live and adopt that truth and apply it to our lives. We call it Islam, but Islam is a way of life, but it's a way of life designed by God. It's one, when you are Muslim, you are one who submits your will to do the will of God. And so when we get confused and we get divided by these titles, where I'm Christian, where I'm this, where I'm that, are you submitting your will to do the will of God? And if that is the case, then you seek the truth of the scriptures and apply those scriptures to your life, because that is your roadmap. That is your guidance on this earth. And you have to believe that the judgment and the chastisement is real. Because,
right,
you know, it's not when you die, when you say you hot as what? You hot as hell. You hungry as hell. You tired as hell. You in hell.
That's right, sis. Go ahead.
Go ahead now.
You know, so in order for us to get some heaven for ourselves, well, where are we going to get heaven from if we don't even know the creator of the heaven? If we don't even know who taught us about heaven or the truth about heaven? So we are responsible for our actions. We are responsible to one another to a certain degree, because we are in a land that is not our own, but is to be made our own, because that is the promise of God to all of his children.
Go ahead.
Notice I said all of his children.
Yes, ma'am.
Not the children, all of his children. And so I'm talking about our original family, you know, the black, the brown, the yellow, the red. You know, let's just keep it real. And I'm not trying to, you know, put any racial spin on it, but I'm just telling you the truth, because we are under a teaching, under a conditioning of something that is contrary to God. And until we break away from that, we're not going to be successful in this thing. So love God, love yourself, love one another, see the God in one another, seek the God in one another. Settle for nothing less than the best. Be patient with your brothers and sisters. Obtain the knowledge that you need. Obtain the truth. And then you hurl that truth at falsehood until it knocks the brains out. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Student Minister James Muhammad, please, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you, beloved. And thank you, Queen, for that wonderful, wonderful distillation of truth. That was beautiful. But I'll say very, very concisely, our sister hit it on the head when she said, it is love. Love, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, is the creative force of and in the universe. But the question is, how can you love what you do not know? And the Bible teaches us in Hosea, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. And the basic knowledge that we all must have, that is the foundational stones upon which every other principle of knowledge is built, is the knowledge of self. So then, what is a woman? And what is a man? We are made to believe that the woman is the second act of creation of God after Adam. And the woman carries a very heavy load according to misinterpretation of Scripture, wherein she is blamed to be the one that seduced Adam and enticed him to disobey the law of God. Not so. She is not the second act of creation. She is the first act of God's creation. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, and the minister continues to teach us, that when the God was creating himself out of the darkness of the universe, he saw in himself a second self and brought that second self out of him, and through that second self he reproduced himself over and over again ad infinitum. This is how he is eternal, and this is how we see eternity through the womb of our woman. So who is a woman? What is a woman? Is she 36, the optimal features that the enemy has classified the woman with? No, the woman is the womb of mine. She came out of the God and then nurtured the God in his continued journey of creation. And then through her, nurtured a reproduction of the God, a manifestation, an offspring of the God. So she is the second self of God. And when a woman looks at herself as God, then she will not lower her standards just for the sake of companionship. She already knows that coming from God, she is always with God. So she's never alone, never alone. So the woman, the man must know what the woman is and who the woman is. And I want to say this to my sister panelists and to all of the sisters and women that are listening. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, if there were no God, then the only other entity in the universe that would be worthy of worship is the woman. So you all chew on that for a bit.
Praise be to Allah.
I'll stop right there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. We got 2 minutes, and I need to make 2 announcements, and then I want you to bring up the announcements for the rest of the week. The first 2 announcements I have to let you know is that Conscious Black Nation is brought to you by Kareem Construction. All facets of construction expertly performed at affordable prices. Free estimates. Contact us at 314-651-1094. It's Conscious Black Nation is also brought to you by Kemet Musk Gold. Kemet Musk Gold is an eclectic blend of all natural aromatherapy oils that provide help in the following. It dispels negative energy, increases knowledge, absorption, helps heal emotional instability, and stimulates the pineal activity. Contact us at 314-616-2060. Queen Aziza, line up for the rest of the week.
Yes, sir. Join us tomorrow at 8 p.m. Central with Brother Jihad. He is going to be hosting out on the front line with the Fruit of Islam, and you will have some favorites there. Student Minister Charles Muhammad out of Phoenix, Arizona, as well as our brother Jamil Muhammad. Who else is on that show? Judge Maurice Muhammad and a whole lot of other people. Join us on Wednesday at 7 p.m. Central for DJ Black Caesar and Friends, our hip-hop comedy show. I'll be back on Thursday. Not sure what my topic is going to be, but I'll let you all know. You know that for sure. On Friday, we will be honored and blessed once again to host Student Minister James Muhammad as he brings on our live study group at 8 p.m. Central on Friday, put on the new man. On Saturday, we'll be back with Young, Gifted, and Black with the Sounds of Philadelphia. And on Sunday, we'll have Economic Development once again with Brother Vernon Muhammad at 6:30 p.m. Central. And so, of course, next Monday, we'll be right back here.